Raising our children with the life-giving ideals of our Catholic faith takes a special commitment to cultivating their hearts and minds. Our guest today, Matt D'Antuono, is here to encourage you moms, dads, and grandparents with some practical strategies for helping our kids love the good, the true, and the beautiful.
Welcome to Homeschooling Saints, the podcast that helps you create the homeschool you love for the people you love. Our host is Lisa Maladnik, a Catholic life coach, TV host, best-selling author, and an instructor at Homeschool Connections.
Before we get started, remember to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you're watching on YouTube, click the bell to join our channel. Hello and welcome. I'm Lisa Maladnik, your host, and I'm excited to welcome Matt D'Antuono to the show to talk about helping our kids love the good, the true, and the beautiful. Matt D'Antuono is a physics teacher, a Great Books discussion moderator for the Angelicum Academy, and an associate of the community of the Friars of the Renewal. He lives on a hobby farm in New Jersey with his wife and 9 children. He holds bachelor's degrees in physics and philosophy and master's degrees in education and philosophy. He writes blogs for the National Catholic Register and is the author of several books, including A Fool's Errand, a brief informal introduction to philosophy for young Catholics. Matt is also a Catholic speaker and a member of the Catholic Speakers Organization, CatholicSpeakers.com, and I have the link for him. So once you really start to enjoy Matt and you want him for your next event, check out the link in the show notes. You can also find him at Facebook. It's called Fool on an Errand. That's the name of one of his books. So you can find him there. And we've got links to his books and also his fantastic YouTube channel, which I can't pronounce, but it's in the show notes, Donik Requiescat. And you can correct me on that, Matt. So good to have you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks. Yeah, glad to be here. Yeah, I'm at a double disadvantage because my name is hard to pronounce. And then I picked a YouTube channel name that is also hard to pronounce.
And you're being interviewed by a host with the last name Maladnik.
Yeah, yeah. So many consonants. And,
yeah. Here we are. Solidarity. All right. So let's start, Matt, just explain briefly for anyone who might be new to the Catholic faith or maybe not familiar with this kind of phrasing. What are the vital connections we're making when we refer to the good, the true, and the beautiful?
There's a long philosophical tradition to these ideas, the good and the true and the beautiful. But one of the reasons that they're so important is because they are what we call universals. So everything shares in some way in truth and goodness and beauty. There's another one as well that we throw in there called unity. So the unity of things, right? Everything that is a thing is in some way one. So if we think about, you know, any particular object, whatever it might be, it is a thing. It's a particular thing, right? Like a tree, for example. And so that tree is one. It is one object. It's a cohesive, coherent, organic unity, and it has an essence. It is what it is. It is the thing that it is, and that is a reflection of the essence of that from the mind of God. It's a thing that God created to be what it is. And so how well it lives up to that thing is how true it is. Truth is defined by Thomas Aquinas as basically the correspondence between thing and mind. That if the thing matches what we have in our mind, then our thought is true, right? We conform our mind, we conform our thoughts to reality. So we match our thought to the thing itself. But a thing can also be true if it matches what it ought to be in the mind of God. So a tree, if it fulfills the essence of being a tree, then it's a true tree. And we get that sometimes people will say something like, well, that's a real man. That's a true man. And why are we saying that? Because that person is living up to the ideal of what it is to be a man. So the reality is matching with the thought in the mind. Mm-hmm. And everything, no matter what it is, insofar as it's a thing, has some truth to it. Since it is a thing, it's somehow matching with what is in the mind of God. And then goodness is related to being related to truth. because ultimately, and in the philosophy of Thomas Aquinas, it is good for a thing to exist fully, for it to be what it is, right? Goodness is ultimately a fullness of being. So when we talk about goodness in terms of the, ethics and that sort of thing, people often get hung up and subjective and that sort of thing. We can talk about that later. But for in the Catholic tradition, the intellectual tradition, goodness ultimately is related to this idea of fullness of being, thing being ultimately what it should be. And that's the idea of it being true to what it ought to be. And then beauty is really the same thing as goodness and truth, because beauty is the intellect's recognition of things that are good. If there's something that's good, our will is attracted to it, and our mind delights in it. Right? And one of the definitions of beauty is that which being seen pleases. That thing that when we experience it, it pleases us. It delights us. And that's the delight that the intellect takes in recognizing things that are true and good. And I would say one as well, that there's that essential unity to things. So they're all connected. Ultimately, why are they so important? Okay, fine. Everything has unity, truth, goodness, and beauty in it to some degree. If it's something that exists, it has to have those things to some extent. Everything that exists has those. But ultimately, it's because those things are what God is. God is ultimate unity. He's the perfection of it. And everything else takes its unity from him because it participates in his unity, right? Everything else is true. He is ultimate truth. He is ultimate goodness. He is ultimate beauty. And so all those things they're in all things, right? Everything has some unity, truth, goodness, and beauty to it. And also, all those things are really one thing in God. We can't wrap our minds around that, how God can be all of those things and yet just be one and the same thing. But that's what the intellectual tradition has handed down to us. And I'm convinced that it's true. And so I think it's pretty important.
Yeah, it's so rich. And for me, I can simplify it for myself because I'm not advanced in philosophy, and that careful kind of connecting and relating that you just did. I can really appreciate it. My heart appreciates it. I respond to the truth and the beauty and the goodness of what you just explored for us and just kind of laid out. But I simplify it for myself by thinking there's a designer, and what he designs, unless it has free will, by its very nature, in its unity, in the goodness and truth and beauty of what it is obedient. It's like these beautiful canticles we have in scripture where praise the moon, praise the Lord, moon and stars and sun and sky and dew and all of that, and all the things that grow up from the ground and the sea creatures and everything else. And how do they praise God? They praise him in obedience, which pleases him. They live their own nature truthfully, beautifully. And it is good. God called it very good when he created it. So that's for me it's probably very rudimentary to you, but that helps me. We're obeying the designer.
Yeah. Well, it's in even those simplifications that, because we do need those to wrap our minds around them. And it's in them that there's so much depth. So we can say them, there's a simplicity to them, but then there's this, it means so much, right? It looks like this little puddle, but really it goes 500 feet down. Really deep.
And I mean, that's image.
We had that with that idea of, you know, the things praising by being what they are. I think that Irenaeus of Lyon, I think it was, who said that the glory of God is a man fully alive.
Yes, that's right.
So just by things being what they are, that is to praise God, and that is to his glory.
So, oh, yeah. And it's so, what, you know, because I'm a coach and I often work with people of faith who have kind of fallen into, without realizing it, the feeling that they were kind of randomly made by God, that they weren't of much importance to him when he breathed life into them, when he willed them into existence out of his own heart. But when we start to look around at creation and how the splendor of it, the magnificence and intricacy of it, all the tiny little microscopic parts in their beauty and sense of order, and right out into the like mind-boggling array of the universe and all of its beauty and order. And we think to ourselves, how could he have ever made anything? God, who is infinite and so perfectly love and so fully alive, you know, completely his nature is to be, right? How could he do anything? Random, careless, substandard, not possible. And it's not an ego trip to appreciate that God has woven parts of himself into your very being, and that obeying that design, knowing it and loving it, and brings us to a place of humble awe at the love of the designer for each of us being unique and unrepeatable souls.
Yeah. And I mean, a couple of words that you mentioned there, you said splendor. That's another definition of beauty. Is you know, veritatis splendor, the splendor of truth. And so, you know, there's that connection there. And another way of defining beauty, and I think this is, I'm going pretty deep into this. I'm actually working on a PhD, and the PhD is in the beauty of physics.
Wow, I love it.
Yeah, and it's I wrote a paper on this, a shorter paper on this, and now it's like kind of expanded, and I'm working with a professor on getting the proposal together, so I'm in that phase still. But this idea of beauty, because what happens is we read what the physicists have written, and they will not shut up about the beauty of physics. You know, they talk so much about the beauty of physics and the, you know, the elegance of these theories and all of that. So I'm trying to make philosophical sense of that, and then also to use that as an argument for the existence of God. But beauty is, and Thomas Aquinas, of course, continued to go back to him. You know, to say that beauty is that which being seen pleases, it's a definition that's been offered, but it's not really a definition, right? It's an effect. That's how we identify what it is. It's this pleasure that we feel at things being what they are, right? It's then the splendor of truth. So that one is one of the aspects. But beauty has these characteristics. First of all, unity or simplicity. So if something is very complicated and convoluted, that's not beautiful to us. The next characteristic would be balance or harmony, right? So it's about the interrelatedness of the parts, how the things relate to each other. So like you said, like the intricacy of things, the whole world, this whole system where there is this perfect order among things, that is beautiful. That's that second aspect, right? And yet it's somehow one as well. And then the third aspect is that clarity, that splendor or brilliance, so that there's a sense of recognition in things.
Yeah.
You know, everything that is has that. Everything is one, and there are these interconnected parts. And if the parts don't connect well, then that kind of takes away from the beauty of it. You know, the clarity. If there's something that we see that we don't understand, it's ugly to us. But then once we recognize it, like maybe something comes into the light, or we look at it a different way, or there's an idea that we finally come to understand, there's that eureka moment, that's that clarity moment. And that's an experience of beauty. That's an aesthetic experience, right? Like when somebody tells a joke, for example, someone tells a joke, and then, you know, the punchline is usually it's not what you were expecting. But then when you get it, when you receive that insight, oh, right, there's that moment of clarity and insight, and yeah. That's just experience.
I love that. And say a little bit to just relate this, Matt, the importance of helping our kids to fall in love with these ideals in our times. Like, what are you seeing that maybe this is an antidote to, or what does it give our kids to love these things?
Yeah. Well, I think that in my opinion, that's the whole goal of education. The entire, and I'm taking this from Plato in the Republic, and the kind of head guy of the Great Book program at the Angelicum Academy, Steve Bertucci. He has the first class every year, the new freshmen are coming in, and it's these online discussions. You have a kid from all over the world, and they've started, you know, a couple of Greek readings already. But he tells them that the goal of education, following on what Socrates, Plato had said, is that the goal of education ultimately is to learn to love the things we ought to love. So in other words, truth, goodness, and beauty. Why? Ultimately, because that is God. Truth and goodness and beauty, unity, we can put that in there as well. But again, they're all the same thing. those are the things that we ought to be cultivating our affection for. That's what it means to be a human being. You know, a saint is not someone who just does what he should do and takes no delight in it. A saint is someone who does the right thing and delights in doing the right thing, as to borrow a phrase from C.S. Lewis, as naturally as a song from a lark.
Mm-hmm.
And that is ultimately directed by love. So as human beings, our whole goal, even the way that we spend our leisure time, I think, ought to be so that we are cultivating the love for what is good and true and beautiful. And that's not something that we always have naturally. I mean, sometimes someone will have an insight, right? They'll have an experience of beauty and they'll get it. It'll just sort of turn them on. But for most of us, it takes some cultivation to be able to see that. Like, for example, the physicists, they didn't walk into a classroom with no physics or math background and all of a sudden see the beauty of general relativity. That's not how it works. It's like, you know, years of education, and then all of a sudden they can look at these theories and they can understand them. I've had a similar experience with classical music. I knew just a little bit more than nothing about classical music, and then I got some, wanted to learn more, and a friend who's a music teacher recommended Robert Greenberg through the great courses, right? The teaching whatever the company is.
Yeah. Anyway, yes. I think like practically every homeschool mom or dad listening right now is nodding their heads, because I think we've all had a look at the great courses. Yes.
So I tracked down and I listened to the lectures for how to listen to it and understand great music. And it changed the way I listen to music. I'm still no expert on classical music, but it's different. There's an insight there, because that was a taste that was worth acquiring.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, those things, the higher pleasures and seeing the beauty in things, takes time to understand and to educate. And we want to be people who can respond to what is good and true and beautiful. When we see something beautiful, we want to be able to respond to it the right way, you know, appropriately. If we see something that's ugly, we don't want to be secretly loving that and then just telling ourselves on the outside, oh no, that's bad, that's wrong. We want to have the right response to that and to see it for what it is and have that experience and that encounter.
Mm. Yeah. And it helps us to be who we are, to recognize our own unity, goodness, beauty. It helps us interpret everything. Once I remember I've interviewed some scientists, other scientists on this show, and they have a sameness of response to a degree. Some will say, I see the beauty of creation because of my faith. Others have said that scientists are discovering faith or becoming deists through their observation of the natural world and the beauty, goodness, and the order, the design, all of that, the splendor of it. So take us into some ways that we can cultivate this love in our kids. What are some strategies that we can start to employ?
Yeah. I mean, one thing that we did as a family, even before I had kind of put all of this stuff together 3.5 years ago, really 4.5 years ago, my wife and I decided that we were going to move out of the suburbs and go to the beauty of the country. So we live in the country now on this hobby farm. Cause we were in, like, every time we would go out to the country driving somewhere, we would say, oh, it's so beautiful here. And just the beauty of the surroundings. And we said to ourselves, wait a minute, we are the parents. We can make this decision. The kids were approaching high school. So we felt like it was a little bit of a tipping point. Either we stay here and then we're kind of rooted here. And not that the kids were necessarily going to be in the school. That was some of the things that we were trying to figure out. Were the kids going to be in school or really continue to homeschool? And then we decided, okay, here we go. We're going to go to the country and we're going to homeschool and we're going to have a hobby farm. And that, so the hobby farm work too is, I think, part of it at least, is an education in beauty. Seeing the way that things work. You know, seeing the orderliness to things. You know, I keep bees. I don't have a lot of hives, just a couple, because I'm so busy, but we do what we can. And it's a thing of beauty to get into the hive and to see the way it works and the orderliness of the bees, and then come to understand, you know, people. I remember I took a short course in beekeeping, and I was just amazed. I mean, it's incredible. And then people ask, and it's so fun to be able to explain the way the bees work, all that orderliness to nature, you know, and even the animals, raising the animals, seeing the whole process of them breeding and giving birth. And then also, I mean, we harvest some of those animals as well. And some of them, you know, the chickens we keep for eggs as well. So the putting together the beauty of nature.
May I ask you, Matt, do you find that your kids, upon, you know, experiencing all this, because they didn't start out on a farm, right? You made a choice at a certain point. Are there kind of conversations that are bubbling up organically as you engage with the natural world in a more intentional way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd be lying if the kids were fully on board and loved every minute of it.
It's a lot of work, right?
that was another thing that we were trying to do in moving to a hobby farm. We wanted our kids to learn to work, to not be afraid of work, and to appreciate work. I see a lot of people and young people who's, it seems like the whole goal of life is entertainment. Like, almost like the meaning of life for them is just to be entertained and to not work as much as they can. To play sports or wash sports and just sit around. And so we wanted to create a different kind of culture and appreciation for work. And so we have that with the hobby farm, but even my children have worked on farms, like going, we have a field, a couple, 6 acres of field of hay, where a farmer comes and he cuts the hay and then he feeds the hay to his cows, but he puts them into bales and he's got to load those bales into his barn. So we've gone and we've worked with him before. And that is not, it is not fun being up in a hot hay loft and, you know, throwing around these big bales of hay and you get dirty and really sweaty. But, my kids have come to appreciate that, especially two of my boys who have worked a lot for him. They were able to use that money that they earned to save up and buy themselves some insurance, some musical insurance.
Wow, nice. So they can see the fruits of their labors, that their labor is worth his wage, and that some good things came of that.
Sorry, I didn't really answer your question. Are there organic conversations that come up? The answer is certainly, because the kids see what's happening once they're done complaining about the farm chores and all that stuff. It's a lot of work, but yeah, there are, because they're asking, well, how does this work and how does this work, and being able to put it all together. But I think it's important for us, whatever we're doing, to take the time to point out the beauty in things. I think that I keep coming back to beauty, because maybe that's what I'm reading so much about and learning about. But that's the thing that kind of gets to the heart, right? Because we can understand truth, goodness, but beauty, sometimes we need someone to just kind of point us in the right direction, to direct our gaze at this. So, because we can learn truth is like facts. We get this fact and this fact and this fact, and we memorize them, or we come to know them through experience. But to point out the beauty of the encounter with things, and to point out the beauty in things, to be that pointing finger. I try to do that in my physics classes. I tell my kids on the first day of school that, in my opinion, the most important reason to learn physics is for beauty, to see the beauty in it. And so throughout the course, I'm trying to point out to them, like, look, this is one of these things that we say is beautiful about physics. And so certainly with the work that we do on the farm and the various subjects, but, you know, bringing it back to the, like you said in the intro about the Catholic faith and falling in love with the Catholic faith, I'm a convert, a revert really, to the Catholic faith. And as I think back on it, one of the things that did strike me was the beauty of the faith, to see how it, just the cohesiveness of it and the orderliness of it, and how everything points back to Christ. As I think back on it, that was something that impacted me in my heart, was really inspired by. But again, I think that that's part of our Our goal is not just teach the facts of the faith, but also to be that pointing finger and say, look at this, like check this out. And to give it a name, this is beautiful. And learn that that's something that's okay to say, because the thing that most people know about beauty is that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, which there's a sense to that, which is true, right? We all have different tastes, but that doesn't mean that beauty itself is something that's purely subjective.
Right. And I feel like there's been lots of studies in the secular world done on this, that the impact of the father's leadership, like just the fact that you're excited about these things, that beauty means something to you, the order and design and the goodness and the truth of things, like that spiritual headship of the father to lead with looking and seeing and receiving and absorbing, and that automatic praise that rises up in our souls when we recognize what is good and beautiful and true. We're going to do lots more with Matt D'Antuono. Everybody, hang on for just a minute while we have a quick sponsor break and hear from our wonderful folks over at Homeschool Connections. We'll be right back with Matt D'Antuono, helping our kids love the good, the true, and the beautiful. See you soon.
Hi, I'm Walter Crawford.
And I'm Maureen Whitman.
We are the co-founders of homeschoolconnections.com and proud sponsors of the Homeschooling Saints podcast,
which is here to help you homeschool more joyfully, more easily, and more effectively.
We want to thank you for listening.
And we invite you to check out our courses at homeschoolconnections.com.
And now back to our program.
All right, we're back with Matt D'Antuono, helping our kids love the good, the true, and the beautiful. So take us into more of what you're doing with your kids, Matt.
Sure. So to help them love the good and the true and the beautiful, and the beautiful in particular, my wife and I have our kids in this homeschool arts co-op. And so it's we think that that's essential for our kids. We have. And so we wanted to have that mixed in somehow. So when we heard about this arts co-op, we were really excited. So we signed them up, got them in, and it's a full day, and the kids can take multiple classes. So each kid is in three or four different classes. They're learning instruments, they're doing theater, they're singing, they're learning painting, all those types of things. Some of the kids are learning multiple instruments, which is wonderful. And right. some of what we're seeing from that is a little bit more of an appreciation. So if we put on some classical music or they hear something, they may not necessarily respond, but now some of them are, I'm learning the violin. That's a violin. I'm hearing that. I think that's a little bit of an in for classical music, is learning one of those instruments like the violin. I'm actually myself trying to learn the cello right now. I've been at it for a little over a year and I'm still terrible, but I'm not giving up.
I love that spirit. That is so good to have a learner's attitude, not just a great example for your kids, but just keeps us humble and keeps us fully alive, right? We're still hungry.
That's it. Yeah. And I'm attracted to it for the beauty of it. But if I just do like 5 or 10 minutes a day, eventually I'll be able to play something, and that's enough for me. Wonderful. But it's that, again, it's that, just, it's like an in, just to open up the door for them to be able to see that. Another sort of pedagogical approach as we teach our kids and as we design curricula, and not that I do this really well with the kids all the time, but is to take the subjects as sort of a historical approach. Like in learning physics, not just present here are the modern theories, but to present here's how the ideas developed, and even to maybe read some of the things that those physicists have written over time. So to actually maybe read some Aristotle, read some Galileo, read Copernicus, read Newton, read Faraday, and these other people. Because what happens is students sort of seem to get this idea that there are these sort of different subjects, and they're each independent, and there are these ideas, and this is what the subject is all about. But studying the historical approach allows us to see kind of the unity and the development and the organic growth of these ideas. The theory of gravitation, universal gravitation by Newton, it's not like he was sitting in an orchard, the apple hit him on the head and like that, GMM over R squared. Not at all. Like it took centuries for that theory to develop. And then to see how all of those ideas are interconnected with each other, this historical development, and how the subjects are related to each other. As a kid, I didn't really appreciate history, but since I've learned about physics and I've studied philosophy, all of a sudden now I have a context because I can look at the history of philosophy and the history of science. I'm thinking about different things that were happening at those times. That's why, like with the Angelicum Online Academy, we do the great books discussions. And that's really the meat and potatoes of the program. They start with the Greeks and they read, they read Euclid, and then they get to the Roman. They're reading Galen. They're reading all the historians and the philosophers. And I think that that's a key thing. You know, ultimately, we don't want our kids to be people who just have these facts, right? We want them to be people who can respond to what is good and true and beautiful and have a perspective on things that goes beyond just the surface externals.
Yeah, if they can also be exposed to the thinking processes and what was emerging with each new generation and what they were able to connect, I think it just helps them to understand their own minds too. So that when they are being, say, manipulated in the media or something's being presented that's not truthful, I think that there will be a framework for them to be able to respond and to be able to call it out, to understand what's not good, beautiful, or true. So I really love for you to just, if you don't mind, we've got links to all three of your books. Would you just say a little bit about what resources you've created that would be helpful to our families?
Yeah, I mean, the books themselves, one is called A Fool's Errand, which this book, I was talking to my wife one day in the kitchen, and I was saying how I love the Catholic intellectual tradition, and it was breaking my heart to think about the numbers of kids that just walk away from the faith, and they think that Catholicism is this just backwards, very strange sort of idiotic superstition without seeing the intellectual depth of it. I was like, someone should write a book about that. And then my wife said, well, why don't you write that book? And so I was right at the beginning of my master's in philosophy. I said, okay. So I sat down, and in like 10 days, I had written the manuscript. And so it's really brief, and it's very much kind of an overview, informal, like it says in the subtitle. But just to give a little bit of a taste of that philosophical tradition and some of the things that we've talked about. And I end the book with beauty. And since ideas are conveyed oftentimes better through stories, the book, The Wise Guy and the Fool, is a collection of stories and conversations. And I had one of the friars actually done some illustrations for it.
Oh, wonderful. Cool.
And I try to talk with my students about philosophy. It has a bit of a history, but every Friday I do what I call Philosophy Friday with my students. My students love it. They come in on Friday and they're like, oh, Philosophy Friday. It's cool. So I introduce a little philosophical idea or quote or question, and we spend 5 minutes talking about philosophy. And I leave it very open-ended. And one year I recorded those conversations. And so that's what that book, Philosophy Fridays, is. It's just those conversations that I recorded. And then mm-hmm. the last chapter of the book is the ultimate lecture. The ultimate just means last, but the last lecture that I give to my students, which is about beauty and physics. You kind of pull physics and philosophy all together for them and put a capstone on this idea that beauty is the most important thing to get out of physics.
Yeah. And say a little bit too about what we will find at your YouTube channel, and I'll let you pronounce it.
Sure. Yeah. The title is Donec Requiescat. It's Latin. It's from the phrase, our hearts are restless until they rest in thee, or our heart is restless until it rests in the singular. So that's that phrase, until it rests. Donec, until requiescat, it rests in thee. And the idea there is I have it, there's some apologetics, there's some philosophy, there's some science. It's just kind of a mix of things that I happen to be thinking about at the time.
Yeah, and some of them are super short. I noticed you have things of various lengths, which is nice.
Always have time for these days. The short ones.
But that just makes it more attractive, really, to all our busy homeschoolers. And you could set your kids loose in a channel like that. It could be a lot of fun. This has been so, so interesting and rich and so important. Matt, take us out with anything else that you'd like to say to our listeners today.
Yeah. Ultimately, this idea of love, that, you know, love is sort of is the queen of the virtues, right? And so it's love that that unites things and gives gives truth to things, right? We're not truly ourselves until we have that love flowing in us and through us and loving. And so becoming one with creation and with each other and with God through love, that's the ultimate uniting factor and, you know, the ultimate of truth and goodness.
Mm, so good. Everybody, thank you for being with us. This is really good stuff. I know you're going to want to share this with your probably middle school and teenagers at, you know, at least probably high schoolers at least. But we've got the links to all of Matt's books and his Facebook page and also his link to his speaker page. And we're really glad that you were able to be with us today. Matt, thanks again for making the time at the end of a really busy day and for being flexible with me because we had to reschedule because of my schedule going a little wonky. But thank you so much. You've been so gracious.
Glad to be here. Glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, everybody. Thanks for being with us. We're praying for you. Please pray for us too. God bless you. And that's our show for today. Our program is sponsored by homeschoolconnections.com. Be sure to subscribe to Homeschooling Saints and leave us an honest review. God bless you, and thank you for joining us.